all the things. We shall play all of them.
Locked in the bunker, shadow shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake.
Welcome to the Sound of One Man Clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. It's Sunday, and you know what that means. That's right. It's time for my weekly therapy session. I have a shit show of a work schedule this week. That's the price you pay sometimes for doing something you love. On the topic of things I love, well, when we first, there are many of me in here. When we first started OMC way, way, way back, when I say way, way, way back, it wasn't that long ago. I think we're hitting about a year and a half, which is pretty cool. I opened with the first four episodes were some of my favorite things. And that was a bit of an introduction into who you're listening to and why I'm here and why I bother to get out of bed every morning. And I thought, you know what? I need to go back to that. That would be really cool. So on with the show. Well, OMC crew, if you listened last week, you know I love, 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 love all things about food. I love getting in the kitchen. I love making people happy with food. Ah, love, love, love. There's so much I love about board games. But today, we're going to be talking about some of my favorite things. I'm going to be doing a top 10 list. Now, I don't usually do top 10 lists in the absence of Super Trooper. He's a fan of these sorts of things, largely because, you know, we get to talk back and forth and occasionally we learn something new about each other, and that's all well and good. Today I'm doing my top 10 solo games. Y'all know I love playing with myself. You know, that's a true story. And this week I'm going to be doing my top 10 solo games that I adore. And it's been done to death by every content creator out there. I absolutely know that. And what's different about my list? It's mine. That's about it. You know, and it just gives you a little insight into me, the things I love. There'd be some things. I actually ran this through the classic Pub Meeple. I put in there all the games that I like to play solo. And there were some things I'm like, oh, no surprise there. But there were some things I was surprised. I was really surprised some of these things made it to the top 10 list. So, why? I guess, I did this back in like episode 2 or episode 3. And some of you are listening now have probably never gone that far back. Because when you first start a podcast, man, the quality is garbage. And you probably got back to about episode 10 and went, oh, I can't go any further. This is so shit. And it's true. It's true. Learned a lot real fast. But the sound quality of my opening sort of couple of episodes was really awful. And if you do feel like going back and hearing the difference between the sultry sounds of my voice here on episode 50 and go back to episode 2, you want to hear a rough start. I mean, I'm still sexy as fuck, but it is a rough start. So I fell into solo games largely because I am in a house where, I mean, people will play games, but I love heavy euros. You know, when I first fell into the modern board game scene, probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ago now, I can't even remember. It was post-COVID, so probably 5 years. I just tumbled straight into the rabbit hole of heavy euros, and my beautiful wife will play games. She quite likes a game, so long as it's light and breezy. My daughter Lou, she loves a heavy euro, but now that she's an adult, she's turning 20 this year, she doesn't have time for dad. You can get fucked, dad. I got my own life. My middle daughter Sparkle will not play board games. She has occasionally played a game or two and has really enjoyed the games she's played, but she will not admit she enjoyed it. She will not volunteer for games. My last hope in this family is, of course, the Peanut, who I have started the indoctrination very, very early and trying to get her up to speed. And she is super keen. And she asks me regularly, like, are we going to play a game today? And sometimes breaks my little dark heart to have to go, I can't today. Saying no to board games with the Peanut is a tough thing, but she has said to me today, oh, let's play some games today. So, you know, it's Sunday, we got stuff to do, but we will get some games. So solo games came about for me largely because it was that or nothing. You know, now that's not to say I don't have friends. I have some amazing friends, but trying to get everyone together for board game day, you guys know how hard that is. And trying to get people together for a regular board game day when kids have ballet and they have dance and they have soccer and they have, you know, other sports and they've got school and it's just trying to get everyone together. It can be tough. So I when I discovered that you could play these games solo, which was very early on, I went right down the rabbit hole. I'm like, wow, I think I bought 10 games in 3 months to kickstart. And then, you know, it started with things like Terraforming Mars and Ark Nova, you know, Dune Imperium were some of the early, early heavy Euros that I bought. Gaia Project, I think, was the first really heavy Euro I bought to play solo. It will always have a spot in my heart for solo gameplay. In fact, I can tell you honestly, I've never played Gaia Project multiplayer. I would absolutely love to play Gaia Project multiplayer. Trying to get to the table and get people to play it. It shouldn't be as hard as it is, because it is a glorious masterpiece of a game. But I have probably played that 30 or 40 times solo, and it is a wonderful game. Now, I don't think I've played Gaia Project in 2.5 years. I recently got the expansion. Last year, I think the expansion came out, which is, you know, more factions and a few other things. I've not played it since. It is on my list. I will play it. I will never get rid of Gaia Project. But it was the first one. It was my first love. So today, we're not going to have a regular episode. We're going to have a My Favorite Things episode. And that's part due to my work schedule the last week and this coming week. I haven't played a lot of games. In fact, in the last week, I only played 2 games. I guess I'll talk about them briefly before we jump into this. But Super Trooper and I, Thursday nights, we historically would get together Thursday nights to play Arkham Horror, because our daughters are friends, and so we're friends. And now if our daughters stopped being friends, we would still be friends. It'd be their problem, not ours. But we used to play last year Arkham Horror on Thursday nights, and then I think Beelzebubbles had to do soccer Thursday night, so we lost our Thursday night gaming. Well, Thursday night gaming's back, and we started Arkham Horror again this week, and we've started a new campaign, and we played it last week on Thursday, and it was, of course, wonderful and horrible, like Arkham Horror is. Arkham Horror is a masterpiece of a game system, and I adore it. We got to play with the beautiful new metallic tokens and upgrade pieces that Super Trooper now has, which are amazing. When you pull your hand in for that Doom and you pull out the autofail, you're still happy because it's such a beautiful metal autofail. Like, oh, it's an autofail, but look at it. It makes me so happy. So we've started that. I can't remember the name of the campaign. When I do a proper episode next week, we'll get into the nitty gritty of it and the characters we've chosen and whatnot. And then after that, we played a couple of hands of Compile 2. Compile 2 arrived recently. I think it arrived while I was away in Fiji in January. Super Trooper and I do love Compile. We love the back and forth, the knife fight in a phone booth bit. And I actually think he stomped on me 2 games in a row. So we got some of the new card sets out for Compile 2, and it was wonderful. And what I love is that the production quality of it, even though the company that produced and published Compile is no longer with us, another company picked it up, I believe, and finished the run out to retail. They have maintained that beautiful quality of those cards. Those cards with the foiling and the circuitry around the outside and the art. It's just a wonderful game, Compile. And Compile 2, it absolutely shines. I can't wait to play more of it and do a little bit of a deep dive now that we have something like 30 different card sets to play from when we're building our decks. That's all I played this week, and that's okay. I'll be okay. I'll be okay. I'm fine. Truly, I'm fine. So anyway, on to happier days. I took all the games in my collection that I regularly play solo. I pulled some out because all the games that I play solo went in. I did the usual, the PubMeeple ranking. If for some reason you're not familiar with PubMeeple, PubMeeple is an online engine that you can import your board game collection to, and you can rank it. You can rank it based on a bunch of different stuff. It brings up 2 games, and you pick the one that you like more. Some of them are really easy. You go, no contest, and some of them come up, and they are agonizing, really agonizing choices. And so I loaded all the games that I play solo into there, and on the final list, I deleted any that I absolutely know have not only no hope of getting to my top 10, but there's just, I'll play them solo in a pinch, but they're not very good solo games. You know, games like Bitoku. Bitoku is a wonderful game. I absolutely adore Bitoku. When you first play it, it looks like something threw up on the table. It's such a busy board. There's stuff everywhere. But I think Bitoku is a spectacular game. And the art's beautiful. And once you get into I won't say the lore, but I guess the story that's embedded in Bitoku, it's quite nice. Revive's another one. I really like playing Revive. Revive is a wonderful Euro. it plays fine as a solo game. When I say it plays fine, you're playing basically just like you're playing the normal game, but it's a beat your own score. And I've come to terms with beat your own score solo games, but I'm not a massive fan of them. You know, I like something that has a very clearly defined win-lose scenario, like a good bot or a you must get this score or you lose. And Revive, I think, offers you some thresholds and says, look, if you get this score, okay, if you get this next level score, well done. I'm not a huge fan of beat your own scores for solos. I like outcome-based solos, and so Revive is a wonderful game, but games like that I've taken off the list. There are a few more shenanigans with all that I did with the list going in, and I'll explain those as I go because they'll make more sense in context as we get through. But Pub Meeple, everything in, two games come up, you compare back and forth, and at the end you've got a tiered ranking list. It's a wonderful thing. It's a fun thing to do with a cup of coffee if you're like, oh, well, what are my top 50 games? If you have lots of games, it's a half a rainy day. Like, I think Super Trooper runs his games through it every year, and he's got something like 1300 comparisons he has to do. I'm like, oh, that's a lot, but you know, if it makes you happy. So without further ado, my top 10 solo games as it stands right now today, which is the 15th of February, the day after Valentine's Day, my top 10 solo games. So I want to start with a couple of honorable mentions. You know, they didn't make the top 10, but they could, you know, if I was feeling differently on another day. Because as you know, when you go today, it's like, well, what do I like more? Do I like Revive or Botoku more? Well, today in my head, I like Revive more, and tomorrow could be Botoku. The OG for me, Gaia Project, did not make my top 10 solo games. The solo on Gaia Project is reasonably straightforward to run. It's a wonderful solo bot. And it's a complicated puzzle. And I really, really like the OG Gaia Project for solo. It didn't make my top 10, but it will always have a place in my heart. Vantage, came out last year by Stonemaier Games. I think Vantage as a solo experience is spectacular. I think it's better with a couple other people at the table if everyone's willing to go down the rabbit hole and just join that experience. I think Vantage in our gaming world is unique. In the experience, I think that it, I mean, I follow a Vantage page and people are spoiler free saying, oh my God, I've just discovered X. And they'll just go, I've discovered the origin of this. And I think, God, I've got to get Vantage back to the table more and more, because there is a rabbit hole of discovery there that is just a wonderful thing. And the Peanut really likes Vantage, and the Fox really likes Vantage, and I really like Vantage. And so Vantage gets an honorable mention. You know, it's, I still maintain that I'm not sure it's a board game in how we think of board games. You know, it's co-op. There's a lot of sort of opportunities for you to go, well, the game's over. You can decide when it's over depending on what you've done, or you can keep going. And I'll tell you what, though, it's a hell of an experience. And so it gets an honorable mention. And the third one that gets an honorable mention today is the 20 Strong system by Chip Theory Games. 20 Strong started off, I want to say it was about 2.5 years ago, with three decks. They've announced that they have an ongoing release schedule for 20 Strong. And 20 Strong is a wonderful system. It's solo only. You have 20 dice that you are using to play the game. And each game that comes out, it has its own flavor. You know, recently they did the Tanglewoods decks. There are four decks done by Manny Tremblay. The art's spectacular. They're based on Goldilocks, Snow White, Little Red Riding Hood, and Belle from Beauty and the Beast. And there's a fifth deck that has an overarching campaign that links them together. There's a Too Many Bones deck. The Cloudspire deck's arrived. So and I know they've got a Nemesis deck coming. I think they've got an Aetherfields deck coming. And so what they're doing is they're taking this system, which is how these dice work and how you manipulate them, and I guess the gameplay loop, and they're layering it onto all these different IPs, which are wonderful. And the 20 Strong system absolutely gets an honorable mention for me. It is a solo only. As I said, it didn't make the top 10 this year. It could have easily if I was in a slightly different mood or it had a different flavor coffee, I'm sure. And as I said early on, I was surprised by some of the things on this list. You know, there were some things that hit this list, well, not on the list, but hit the top 10. I went, huh, I knew I liked that game. I didn't know I liked it that much. So at number 10, and this is again going to be a system, because there is a library of flavors you can take for this. But this is the Zombicide system. I really love Zombicide. I used to say I like Zombicide. I'm going to hop the fence. I love Zombicide. And that starts with Zombicide Second Edition and goes all the way through. I will play any flavor of Zombicide you want to put in front of me. I've got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one, which is a part of, the White Death. Project L has loaned me Black Plague. I think it's called Black Plague. Yep, it's called Black Plague. I have a couple of campaigns that I've invested in. I've got the Paris campaign. I've got Marvel Zombies, which is fantastic. It flips it around where you're playing zombies and you're eating innocent bystanders. I think Zombicide is a bag of fun. It's a bag of fun. And if you're playing solo, you've got to play four characters. There's no way to play less than four characters, but the decision space is really light. And four characters, you're looking at the board and it's a little puzzle and you know things are coming in from different areas and you have an idea of how they're going to react. There's a card flip that decides how the zombies will behave and where they will spawn. I don't win Zombicide very often, but I really love playing it. Zombicide gets a number 10 spot for me. I am still just the tiniest bit hopeful that Deceased is going to deliver. There's some weird comms coming out of Simon on Zombicide, on Deceased rather, in that last year in June, they announced that all the mass production was done. It's done. And then this year in January, they went, yeah, now we're starting molding. I'm like, well, what? We've got 400 photos of finished minis. What do you mean you start? Anyway, I'm trying to stay optimistic. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come. I've got plenty of Zombicide. There's Guillotine Games has picked up the Zombicide IP, and they are doing a pirate-themed Zombicide crowdfunding this year on GameFound, so I'm very excited because I love me some fucking pirates. And so, look, Zombicide system, I love it. That is by Raphael Guiton, Jean-Baptiste Lulien, Nicolas Raoult, and it's art by Edouard Guiton, Thierry Masson, Eric Nahout, and published by Simon Games. Or it used to be published by Simon Games. I believe Guillotine Games has picked up most of it at this point. I think it's Guillotine. At number 9, we are getting into the first of the Chip Theory games that are on this list. And this is a game by Chip Theory that is wildly divisive. People either really love this game or they freaking hate it. And I can understand why. That's Burn Cycle. Now, I think Burn Cycle is a superb game. But I will die on the hill that says Burn Cycle is a solo game. If you were to play this multiplayer, I just think it's diluting a decision space and making it less fun. Because often in Burn Cycle, the next move that you might need to make, I won't say it's obvious, but sometimes you look at the board and go, well, I have to do this next. This is what I have to do. And if you're splitting those decisions in half and someone across the table is like, well, on my turn, well, I obviously have to do this, so this is what I'm going to do. That can kind of suck, right? Because in Burn Cycle, you've got this huge sprawling map on the table, and it's a stealth game. It's basically a stealth game. You're playing little robots and you're breaking into different companies, trying to hack their terminals, and you get cool little gadgets and gear out of the terminals. And on the side of the board, you've got another board where you are basically hacking into the mainframe. It's action programming. It's so tactile. It's one of the few games that I would consider buying all the brass minifigs. This is something that Chip Theory does because Chip Theory overproduces games to death. And I just, like, they're the most overproduced games on the planet. And they also make these brass minis for all of the main characters and all of the baddies, and you can buy them because of course the characters are chips on a board, and there's no issue with that. But the heavy chips that they have a metal core, and so these brass minis, they click onto the minis, onto the chips rather, and they are so sexy, these brass minis, that I would consider doing this for Burn Cycle and not for, say, something like Too Many Bones, which they also have these brass minifigs for, is that orientation really matters in Burn Cycle, because you've got all of the baddies that you're chasing around the map. How they're oriented will affect the moves you want to make. And you can look down and you can see there's a little chevron on the chips. You can see which way they're facing. But if you had a brass mini on there that basically is pointing a certain way, you can see whether you can get past these guys, because these guys are moving on set patterns around the map and you're trying to sneak past them in many cases, or sneak up behind them and do all sorts of things. I mean, these brass minis are eye-wateringly expensive. And, you know, my love and my love affair, my favorite things of gourmet game pieces, that's a conversation for another day. But Burn Cycle is a wonderful game. It is a solo game, and I think it would be quite painful to play multiplayer. But as a solo game, it is a spectacular experience. It's a wonderful puzzle. That's Burn Cycle, designed by Josh Carlson, Shannon Wedge, art by Johan Boissonnette, Anthony Letourneau, and published by Chip Theory Games. The first time I ran this list, there were five out of my top 10 were Chip Theory Games. And I thought it's not that there's anything wrong with that, but I didn't think it accurately represented what I think my favorite games are. Now, I love Chip Theory Games. I really love Chip Theory Games. I think they're wonderful, and I think they're very attuned for the solo player. So some of the shenanigans involve not so much pulling some of the Chip Theory games out, but when the comparisons came up in PubMeeple, rather than going, "Oh, I love that game," I was thinking about, let's say if Burn Cycle came up against Shackleton Base. And I, instead of going, "Well, Burn Cycle is a better solo game," it's like, "Well, hang on. Shackleton Base plays really well solo." So I redid the ranking, making sure that when something like Shackleton Base came up, that I put my hat on. I went, "No, how is this as a solo game? Do I prefer Burn Cycle over Shackleton Base? Not necessarily. Which one do I want to play solo? Which one do I think is a better solo game?" And it wasn't even about necessarily which one I would want to play. I tried to be quite analytical in which one do I think is a better solo experience. So I may want to play one more than the other, but that's also linked to when was the last time I played? How long ago has it been? How long has it been since I've played that particular game? So I actually ran this ranking twice because I had to reset my brain and go, "Okay, you're not thinking about this the right way." I made it less about gut feel and more about, "Okay, well, I haven't played this game in a long time. I'm dying to play it. Is that unnaturally making it more attractive to me in this system?" So, Burn Cycle, let's move on. That was number 9. On to number 8. Number 8 is an IP game, and it's a game that I'm not saying I was hesitant about because I try, certainly in the last 2 or 3 years, to do a fair bit of research on games before I go and jump and just hit buy on them. I don't think I've ever bought a game and gone, "Ugh, get rid of that." But certainly there are some games that I've bought and gone, "Well, I hope this pans out on the table the way I'm hoping, the way I fantasized that it would." And I am a massive Batman fan. So at number 8, I've got Batman: The Dark Knight Returns, the game. That is on the box. Okay. It's called Batman: The Dark Knight Returns, the game. Now, The Dark Knight Returns, Batman: The Dark Knight Returns, the game. I'm just going to call it Batman: The Dark Knight Returns or Batman. It is a highly narrative game, and it's played over 3 chapters. I do have the deluxe version that's got the helicopter minis and the Batmobile minis and all of the characters. And it's wonderful. It's very tactile on the table. And you basically have this map that doesn't look a whole lot unlike an Unmatched map, but each of the circles are divided into 3 sections. One is for, it's been a while since I played, one is for the police, one is for the mobs, and one is for, allies, maybe. I'm sorry. It's been a while. I need to get this back to the table because it's a wonderful game. And this is a game of attrition. Because what happens is your decisions and your actions and your combat, the events that come out, what they do is they slowly erode at your 3 values, your health, your sanity, your nobility. Again, I've got those wrong. It's been a while. But you've got 3 tracks that, and the different decisions you make erode those. And it's very hard to refill them at all. And you're trying to get through all 3 chapters. It's a really fun game. And if you like DC, particularly if you like the Batman IP, it's a solo game. It's a solo only game. There is no option to play this multiplayer, and nor should there be. This is a puzzle you put on the table and you work through. And it is a really wonderful bit of game, especially for little Batman man babies like myself. The art's great. The cards are great. The events that come out are themed. When you fight the Joker, he feels like the Joker. When you fight Poison Ivy, she feels like Poison Ivy. They make decisions. I say decisions, the things that the characters and the enemies do feel like the characters and the enemies. And as a Batman fan, I love it. It's designed by Daryl Andrews, Morgan Dontonville, art by Arnaud Boudoiron, and published by Cryptozoic Entertainment. Cryptozoic Entertainment, I believe they specialize in IP type stuff. Number seven. Number seven for me, again, this is a game that is not a solo game. It has a solo mode. And I have never played it multiplayer. I would love to play multiplayer. I actually think some of my game group would play it. I have a sneaking suspicion that they would not so much hate it, but kind of go, eh, at the end. As a solo game, I adore it. The table presence is 9 million out of 10. It's another massively overproduced game, and this is Andromeda's Edge. Andromeda's Edge is the spiritual successor to Dwellings of Eldervale. It is a massive space opera, if you will, with emergent territories. You've got to explore and develop and build different structures on these places. There are tracks you've got to go up, and tracks are points, and tracks are abilities, and tracks are bonuses. It's combo-tastic. It's got dice rolling combat, which you go, ugh, dice rolling combat. Oh, but it's pretty good. And the nice thing about the dice rolling combat here is if you get a lucky roll, you can have one ship against six ships, and the one ship can still be standing at the end. And you also have this lovely hand of cards that mitigates your dice rolls in a number of ways. It is beautifully produced. Of course, this is by Cardboard Alchemy, who are getting a fair reputation for overproduced games. They've done things like Flamecraft and Flamecraft Duels, and I can't think what else, but everything that seems to come out from them seems to be cranked to 11 in the production quality. It's a bear to set up. It takes up almost my entire table, but it's a gorgeous thing. And what I usually do when I'm playing Andromeda's Edge is I'll set it up and I'll play three or four games, you know, over the course of two or three nights, because resetting it is a piece of cake. Resetting it is like, zoop, you just reset all the tiles, you reset the card markets, you do a couple of shuffles, you put some moons out, and you're ready to go again. You take a new faction. The solo on Andromeda's Edge is really easy to run, and it's an interesting puzzle. And I thoroughly enjoy Andromeda's Edge. Andromeda's Edge Genesis is delivering sometime this year, which brings out a couple new factions that I think you can play, and a couple new big bad guys that will go in the box. And they were clearly planning ahead, because there are slots in the box for the new minis. There's slots in the box for the new parts. It's all going to fit in the box, which I freaking love. And that is by Luke Laurie and Maximus Laurie. It's art by Sergio Chavez. The art on Andromeda's Edge is fabulous. And, of course, it's published by Cardboard Alchemy. That's my number seven. We're going to take a break for a couple of ads real quick, peeps. And we're back. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Thank you for your patience. Number six. Now, number six, this is an absolutely amazing game. I was actually quite shocked this only came at number six for me, because I think multiplayer, this, if it's not my number one game, I would be surprised. And this is Voidfall. Now, Voidfall is a spectacular bit of game. It is a masterpiece of game design. It is I think it's technically a 4X Euro. It's probably 3.5X Euro. But it is completely deterministic, and that's a wonderful, that is a success story in and of its own, that there are no dice, there are no card flips, there's nothing you can't plan for. Now, when you play solo, you have a different board out, you have a different control board, and you have the crisis board that you're dealing with. And the crisis board, it does have cards that you're flipping that are random. You have these random challenges, we'll call them, that you flip every single turn, right? So you flip those, and then you've got one turn to deal with the challenge. Otherwise, it goes onto the crisis board, and it gets worse. So the amp up in this game is fabulous. The pacing is fabulous. I've never played Voidfall co-op. I would love to play Voidfall co-op, because the co-op game of Voidfall is the same game as the solo game of Voidfall, but you're dealing with these crises together, and you're dealing with these challenges together. And in order to win the game, everyone has to have a score higher than the Voidborn. The Voidborn, rather than you trying to beat each other's on a score, in order to win, everyone's score has to be higher than the Voidborn. So if somebody's lagging behind, you would need to chat and have a look around the board and go, guys, I need another 30 points or we are out. And how can we get those? How can we meaningfully get those points? As a solo puzzle, Voidfall is absolutely superb. There are layers upon layers on how they manage the solo, such that you don't feel underpowered, even though you're dealing with the board all by yourself. There are a number of I can't remember what the cards are called. You know, the cards you get that are in your hand that you can play that have your actions. There are some powered up ones that you have access to that come out every round. Again, there are some surprises in that these crises that flip over, which are, they're weighted. It's a weighted deck. So in cycle one, there are a certain level. In cycle two, it's a stacked deck of crises that you build. But they come out and you've got a little bit of time to deal with them. And then they go onto the crisis board and you can still deal with them. Right, they're there, but it amps up very quickly, and if that gets out of hand, the game it gets out of hand very quickly. It's wonderful. Voidfall is a wonderful game. Came in at number 6 for me. That is designed by Nigel Buckle and David Turksey, art by Ian O'Toole, and published by Mind Clash Games. One of my favorite bits of trivia that no one ever seems to know is this is actually a remake. It's a reskin and a redevelopment of another game that was designed by Nigel Buckle many years ago. That David Turksey had a chance to play, and he said, "Nigel, this needs to be something. This needs to be on everyone's table." And so he got involved, and that's why Nigel Buckle is first on the development team, on the design team, because it was actually his game originally. Wonderful game. That's my number 6. Number 5 is a game that I only picked up last year and played for the first time. It is very 4X-y. It is a wonderful game, and it's a wonderful bit of puzzle. This does have dice. This does have dice mitigation. It's got surprises. The board's emergent, and that's Zaya Legends of Adrift System. Now, Zaya has been around for quite some time. It's not a particularly new game. I can't remember the year Zaya was published. I want to say maybe 2018, could be 2021. I could look it up, but I'm not going to. And in Zaya, you are exploring space systems. You have a massive stack of tiles. When I say massive, there's got to be 40 different tiles in there that you can have access to. And they come out. And when certain tiles come out, NPCs come out on the board, different NPCs, depending on how you've seeded your game. And they will chase around and do all kinds of stuff to screw with you all game long. You start with this teeny tiny ship that doesn't have a lot it can do. It can't carry much, and you're basically space pirates. I mean, you're venture capitalists or whatever it is in the game, but you're essentially a space pirate because you can shoot other ships down. That goes badly for you if you do, but you can shoot other ships down, and you're traveling around the board. It's very sandboxy, right? When the board comes out, you can look at it and go, right, well, this is the direction I want to go, and this is what I want to play with. There's a market for this, I think it's 6 different goods that evolves and changes, and it seeds in different ways. And so, you know, it's not the kind of game where you can go, well, I'm going to trade copper and I'm going to rinse repeat, because after doing it once or maybe twice, the copper market's depleted, right? So you can't do it again. It's a really clever bit of game design. This is, as I said, it's been around a while. As a solo game, it is absolutely spectacular. It's a commitment. You know, it's a 3-hour solo game, but who cares, man? That's Zaya Legends of Adrift System. That is by Cody Miller, who's a legend of a human being. I've had a couple of interactions with Cody Miller. And the art's also by Cody Miller and Steve Tyler and Peter Woken, and published by Far Off Games, which is Cody Miller's company. Cody Miller is also responsible for bringing Aridia, The Paths We Dare Tread, which is a new campaign game that was released, I think, early last year or late 2024. It's in reprint on GameFound right now. I think you can late pledge for it. I have no affiliation with Cody Miller. I just think he's a super nice dude, and I want to support what he's putting out there. Zions. Might be time for another coffee. It's coming up on 11 o'clock. It's a late start today for me, and that kind of fucks with my rhythms. Zaya, Legends of Adrift System. Wonderful, wonderful game. I would 100% play this multiplayer. I think it would be a blast multiplayer. I think you're out on the board moving around. You're interacting with each other. You can shoot each other down. No one dies. You just respawn. You respawn in a different spot. I think your ship starts again at... I can't remember. I've never played multiplayer. I would 100% play this multiplayer. I think it would be a blast multiplayer. Number 4 is the only... I think it's the... Let me skip ahead to the 3-2-1. Okay, I'll say it's the only campaign game on here. There's one more, but it's not really a campaign game. It's just a fucking long game. This is the only campaign game on here, and this is, I think, the greatest campaign experience I've ever had in campaign games. and that is Agamonia. Now, Agamonia is a huge boxer game, and it is wild. It's like hot pink and lime green. Like, it's got this really bizarre aesthetic with the minis and whatnot. But, oh, man, as a campaign game, it is spectacular. And I'm sitting here staring at the box. I can see it over my microphone and my sound shield here. Sitting on the shelf, taunting me, going, Hammers, you owe me some plays. Because I think I'm up to scenario 8 or 9. I bought Agamonia. I put it on the table. And I think it stayed on my table for about a week and a half. And then I put it away. And I brought it out again a little while later. And it stayed for another week and a half. So once it goes on my table, it tends to stay there for a little bit. And I tend to play 2 or 3 or 4 scenarios. I think I might be up to scenario 7 or 8. And there's only 22 or 23 in there. But the wonderful, wonderful thing about Agamonia, and the thing that I think that it does better than any other campaign games, is each scenario comes out, and it's a very clear story embedded in the scenario. Now, don't get me wrong, I really enjoy Gloomhaven, I enjoy Frosthaven, I enjoy Jaws of the Lion, I adored ISS Vanguard and Tainted Grail. They were wonderful games. But when you lay out the scenario for Agamonia, it's not go out there, kill some things, smack those 4 columns. And for those of you that have played something like Gloomhaven and Frosthaven, there are some more meaningful missions. There's some things where you're doing something different. But they're very much, here's the puzzle. It's a landscape puzzle. Here's the thing you've got to do. You've got to math it out, and you've got to work out how to get it done and get out. And it's, the gameplay's amazing, right? Like, I'm not shitting on the Gloomhaven system whatsoever. Agamonia, you'll start with the map. And the campaign is basically a deck of tarot cards, and they tell stories. And what will happen is you'll put a token out on a certain hex, and it'll seed the board. And when you get to that space, you will take one of these tarot cards, and you'll read the story on it. And you'll have to make a decision. And you might get there, and you have no idea what it is till you get there. It's not like, well, we got to get our strongest dude there because he's got to start bashing away. You might need your most spiritual. You might need your strongest spell slinger. You might need your most agile, but you don't know until you investigate the space. You investigate the space, you get the card out, and the card will say, look, there's a hole down into the earth here, and you've got to be able to jump down and survive to see what's down there. But if you can jump down there, you flip the card and can see what's on the back. And so you might look at it and go, whoa, yeah, okay, I need to succeed at this type of challenge. So if you fail, the other wonderful thing about Agamonia is it's 100% fail forward. There is no rinse repeat. There is no bashing on the same scenario 10 and 12 times. If you fail the scenario, it branches in a different direction. It opens up different opportunities. And so, but coming back to the scenario, you've got this tarot card. If you succeed and you flip it over, there could be a reward on the back. Or that card could lay out on the map. It could have alternate art on it. And you lay it out, and all of a sudden the terrain has changed. And it could say, get cards 7, 8, and 9, and you get them, and there's a cascade of changes all around you on the board. So all of a sudden the whole scenario has changed. You're trapped in a hole, or there's been a cave-in, or all of a sudden there are brambles sprouting up all around. I mean, it is wonderful the way Agamonia manages to make the scenario emergent. And the number of times I've gone into one of these scenarios thinking it's going to be X type of scenario, and it's something entirely different. I adore it. I cannot wait to get back to Agamonia. You know what? I'm traveling for work this week. It's going to be a shitter of a week. And I'm hoping to get Arkham Horror on the table Thursday with Super Trooper. But maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll do some Agamonia this week. Maybe. Agamonia. Designed by Max Wickstrom. Art by Petri Hiltunen, Chad Hoverter, Thomas Jedrusek. Sorry. There are 19 artists here. I'm sorry. And published by Lauta Pellet, which is a Finnish publisher. Tell you, we're into the top three. Now, these are games that I 100% knew would be on here. Or at least 2 out of the 3 I knew. The third one, I was pretty sure it would be on here because it is a wonderful solo game. But we're getting into the meaty end of it. So, number 3, this is a game that, again, it's not an overly new game. But the Ultimate Edition came out just a few years ago. And it is a spectacular game. It's a solo game that has a two-player mode that I would never, ever entertain. The two-player mode, it looks like something they went, well, if you really want to play as two player, here's how you could do it. But I don't know why you would. And this is Nemo's War. Nemo's War Ultimate Edition is what I have, and Nemo's War is basically it's based on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. You've got Captain Nemo with the Nautilus that is sailing around the seven seas, and basically taking on ships. You're sinking ships. You've got ships from multiple different armies that come out, and it is another puzzle of attrition, like the Batman game, in that you have these three stats. You've got crew, hull, and Captain Nemo, and every time something happens that's bad, one of those, sometimes two of them, will go down. If you want to, there's a lot of dice rolling in Nemo's War, and there are ways to mitigate those dice, and if you want to roll again, you can tax one of those resources, and if you fail, it goes down again. I've had games of Nemo's War that end very, very quickly, and I've had games of Nemo's War that have gone, you know, 2 hours. The wonderful thing about Nemo's War is you start each game by choosing what your priorities are as Captain Nemo. Am I an explorer? Am I a scientist? Am I a warfaring pirate? And you have different thresholds and different things you have to achieve in order to have a win in the game. There's a deck of cards that is narrative. I'll say the narrative's quite light on. It's a bit like Too Many Bones narrative. You flip a card, something happens. And that deck's seeded with mandatory events that will come out. And usually a game with Nemo's War, I'll put on the table on a rainy day, and I'll play three games of Nemo's War back to back in a single day. It is a wonderful bit of game. It is a wonderful puzzle. It looks amazing on the board. It's so, so good. I love Nemo's War. Nemo's War is by Chris Taylor and Alan Emmerich, art by Ian O'Toole and Clark Miller, and published by Victory Point Games. That's my number three solo game, Nemo's War. I think it is freaking glorious. Number two. Now, number two is a game that has 9 bazillion expansions. It's a wonderful... I've only played it twice multiplayer. I've played it two player. And when I play it solo, I usually play it two or three handed. Now, three handed taxes my brain a little much. Two handed is my sweet spot. Three handed makes the board bigger. It makes it more complex. I am on some forums, some solo gamer forums on Facebook. There's a guy who plays this game six-handed, which means he's basically got to stand up and walk around the table every time he takes a turn. This is Spirit Island. Now, if you've not had the pleasure of Spirit Island is a co-op game in which you are slumbering spirits on an island. It's called Spirit Island. And you have some unique powers. And you've got the colonialists that are invading. So you've got the Dahan, which are the local tribes, and the colonialists are invading. Their explorers come out. Those explorers turn into small towns. Those towns turn into cities. They blight the land and damage the land. And if you get too much blight, your spirits die. You can't survive with the blight of the colonialists. So you are basically trying to murder and drive these colonialists off your little island. Now, if you play one spirit, you get one little map tile. If you play two spirits, you get two map tiles. If you play three spirits, you've got three map tiles. So playing three-handed means you're basically fighting the game on three fronts. But the way you can choose your spirits is such that you have spirits that naturally bounce off each other. So you've got a spirit that can do XYZ skills, and another spirit can do ABC skills, and they might mesh really nicely. So when I play Spirit Island, I try to choose spirits that I know will bounce off each other quite nicely. If one spirit dies, you lose the game. There are a number of ways to lose the game, right? And if one of your spirits dies, or, you know, if you've got all the blight that can be put out goes out, the game's over. It's fabulous. It's not even that hard to teach. There's a day I was sitting here and Super Trooper said, "Hey, would you teach me Spirit Island?" I'm like, "Sure, I'm a little rusty, but let's do it." And, you know, we played the game. I think we lost the game, but Spirit Island is a spectacular experience. There are a number of expansions for Spirit Island that do different things, not just bringing out new spirits, but new mechanics. And it's just a shame. Greater Than Games, RIP Greater Than Games, which is the company that published and distributed Spirit Islands, is no more. Hopeful somebody else picks it up. Not that I need more. I don't need more Spirit Island. In fact, there's at least one expansion out there that I don't have. And that's largely because Spirit Island is already sitting in two boxes. And I don't have any room for anything else Spirit Island. I think that was Feather and Flame was the one that I don't have. I have everything else Spirit Island. I have some gorgeous upgraded tokens that I got off Etsy that are 3D printed. I've got a wonderful wooden and acrylic insert for it, which makes it a dream to set up and wonderful to have on the table. I love, love, love Spirit Island. I think it is a triumph of solo gaming. And I love playing a multiplayer as well. At Spirit Island, there are 15 credited artists on Spirit Island. So I, you know, forgive me, I'm not going to go through all of them. And that's probably because, and that's only the base game. There are 15 credited artists on the base game. And that's because you have hundreds of cards with powers on them. You've got a dozen spirits with unique art. And so there are 15 credited artists. It's designed by Eric Royce. And of course, published by the No More Greater Than Games. Well, if you're counting at home, OMC crew, you know we were up. We are now up to the number one game on my solo list. Those who know me well or listen regularly can probably pick what this is, just because I ramble on about it a fair bit. But my number one solo game is Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. Now, this is where some extra shenanigans came into this list. I decided that I was not going to put too many bones on this list. Not because Too Many Bones isn't a wonderful game. Too Many Bones would have been in the top 10 as well, right? Too Many Bones is, these both these games are by Chip Theory Games. Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era, you could ostensibly call that Too Many Bones 2.0. It is a It's a re-implementation of the Too Many Bones system. It cranks it up to 11. The Too Many Bones system is already quite complex. It's a tough game to jump into without some coaching. You would need a game master to assist. And that's not because we aren't all clever little monkeys. It's just, it's a tough system. Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era leverages that into a new layer, a new level, which is spectacular. And of course, it basically takes the Elder Scrolls lore and world and layers it on top. So when I said Agamemnon is the only campaign game, it's not technically. Technically, if you play a game of Elder Scrolls, it is a campaign game. It's a three-game campaign. I like to think of it more as a game in three acts than a campaign game. Those acts just happen to be 4 hours long. You know, if you're going to play Elder Scrolls, you are committing to 12 hours. And that doesn't include character creation, which if you get a little bit of analysis paralysis, you know, in character creation, it could take a while. You know... I think realistically, if I was going to play this multiplayer, we'd tack character creation on at the end of a game day. Everyone could create a character and we'd file that away and then start playing another day, because character creation is probably a good hour if you really want to sort of pick it. Because anyone who's played Skyrim or Morrowind or Oblivion, you know that you even when it's digital, you're spending 20 minutes to half an hour picking your character stats and choosing your... which star you're born under and choosing your religion and choosing your innate powers. You get all of that. All of that is carried over to Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. It feels like you're playing a Skyrim or a Morrowind. The art is wonderful. The game loop is wonderful. The challenge is there. There are dungeons you'll stroll into where you get absolutely slaughtered in the first move, and there are dungeons you swan into later in the game where you are just swinging through there like a demigod, just laying waste to everything around you. Again, it's overproduced to death. There is a Too Many Bones Trove Chest type storage coming later this year for it with an expansion. For what it's worth, I hope they do a better job than they did on the Cloudspire Chest. My Cloudspire Chest is really quite fucked up with some of the finer details, which I was quite disappointed in. And Chip Theory, who's known for the top shelf quality, basically came back to me and said, yeah, no, that's fine. We're fine. We're happy with that. I was disappointed, but we'll call it just the one-off at this point that, you know, here's hoping that the chest that comes for Elder Scrolls is a higher quality finish. The Cloudspire chest I have, it holds the game. It's just, it's quite a, there's glue, there's chunks of wood sticking out. It's not what I've come to expect from Chip Theory, but you know what? I'm not going to paint them with that brush off one moment in time. Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. I will be aiming this year to get a, we'll call it a campaign, but we'll get a game through with other people. It's a big commitment because, as I said, it's 4 hours for an act. And you can either lock down and do it all in one day, or you can split it up. There's a wonderful save system. There's a wonderful save system that comes with Elder Scrolls that makes it very, very easy to pack this thing away and bring it out again. So that is my number one. There are 6 credited designers. There's a horde of credited artists, and I'm sure there's many more that were even credited because much of this art has been ported over from Bethesda. Bethesda had to approve every single piece of art in the game because it's their IP and they have every right to. And that is by Chip Theory Games. That is Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. A wonderful, wonderful experience solo. I can't comment on it multiplayer, but I'm hoping to one day. That's my top 10. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. It's been a wonderful day. It's going to continue to be a wonderful day. I am stepping into a shit show of a week. No, look, that's rough. I love my job. My job is easy and breezy, and I adore it. I got 3 days of traveling this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, back to back, and they're not even in the same place. I've got to go to 2 different cities in 3 days, and that just kind of sucks. All the complaints out of the way. I'm hoping to get more games in this week. I'm hoping to get some games in today. It's a little rainy in Sydney, Australia today. I'm hoping to get some games in. And that is me done and dusted. My therapy session has concluded for the day. You can reach me on the socials. You can find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG. Subscribe to Guild 4426. I've started popping episode notes in there that just augment what's happening. You can hop over there and have a look if you like or not. Doesn't matter. You can help OMC by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram or by leaving a review on whatever platform you choose. As I always say, if it's a bad review, I'll survive. If it's a good review, hooray! Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you chose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, especially if you've got to play with yourself. Peace out, mofos. Waiting.